benefits. But also it enables us to show solidarity with our other dioceses in the state.
Reporting for KPFA News, I'm David Hummel.
I'm Candy Shannon, and you are tuned to Member Supported WPFW Washington.
Good afternoon, Taking Action family. My name is Anthony David Jr. I am the environmental justice organizer with Empower DC. Today I will be filling in for Daniel. So I hope you all are rocking with me today. I'm super excited to be here with you all today as your guest host. This is super exciting and to be launching Earth Month with you all. So happy April 1st to you all. And super excited for our guest speakers that we have today. But before I introduce our guest speakers, we are also joined with my environmental justice manager, Marita Mendoza. Marita, may you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Empower DC.
Yes, thank you, Anthony. Hi, everyone. This is Marita Mendoza. I'm the environmental justice manager. And really excited to be on the show today. Just briefly, I just wanted to share a little bit about Empower DC for any new listeners out there. So since 2003, Empower DC has advanced racial, economic, and environmental justice in the district by investing in the leadership and organized political power of DC's most impacted residents and communities. So we really believe in the power of residents shaping their own decisions and are guided by a vision in which DC is a state where human rights and needs are met, systemic harm is exposed and repaired, and empowered residents can shape the decisions that impact their lives and communities' health and well-being. So today we'll talk a little bit more about environmental justice and how we tackle and how our guests tackle environmental justice today. To pass it back to you, Anthony.
Thank you so much, Maritza, for that wonderful overview. If you all would like to learn more, please visit our website at empowerdc.org. And yeah, so now we're going to be switching gears over to our amazing panelists. I'm so excited. This is such a wonderful treat, you know, two amazing powerhouse women that I really do look up to. So I will be introducing them. So starting with our amazing Latricia Adams. She is a dear friend of mine. She is the founder, CEO, and president of one of my favorite organizations, Young, Gifted, and Green. She's a powerhouse advocate for environmental justice, fighting against lead exposure and pollution in disadvantaged communities. From 16 years in public education to serving on the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council, her impact is undeniable. She also a child health advocate for the year and a proud member of the Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. And then next, we also have our panelist, Dr. Jalone White Newsome, a visionary leader in environmental justice. She made history as the first federal chief environmental justice officer under the Biden-Harris administration, leading the first ever White House Office of Environmental Justice. Now she's back at the helm of Empowering a Green Environmental and Economy LLC, driving people-centered solutions for equity and sustainability. A Detroit native engineer and scholar, Dr. Jalone is dedicated to making real change while balancing a life as a proud wife and a proud mommy. So I don't know if we have any applause sounds, but I'm going to give y'all my applause and give y'all flowers right here. You know, thank you all so much for joining us today. And before I let you all turn it over to y'all to kind of give us a little more about, you know, who you all are as individuals, I would like to ask you all, you know, what does environmental justice mean to you? So you can kick it off to whoever feels ready.
I can start. So now I know who I need to be my hype man. So thank you so much for that introduction. I'm so happy to be here with Empower DC, which echoing all of the love. I'm so proud of Empower DC and to be partnering community with you all. So my background to EJ was interesting. I pretty much have dedicated my whole life and student loans to children. I started as a teacher. I taught middle school and high school, but the majority of my time was actually spent prior to my EJ work in district administration, including DC public schools. So what kind of catapulted me into the environmental justice arena was actually during the Flint water crisis. So, I mean, that was a horrific era in our current, it's not even history. It'll be 11 years this month, and Flint residents still have not received any settlement money. It's been over a decade. So learning about what happened with the Flint water crisis kind of took me down a rabbit hole, if you will, around lead poisoning. And, you know, fast forward got me into this place where I did a huge career change, which really wasn't that big, because when you work in our public schools, you don't get any closer to families, right, and children. And so to answer your question around what does environmental justice mean to me, it means life and liberty. So when we think about the environment, and one of the things that, you know, besides children that's near and dear to me are births. So I always advocate about people from the very beginning. Our very first environment is the womb, right? And so when we think about how we live and how we thrive, it's all based on the environment that we live in. And so that justice piece is to ensure that there is equity, that there is dignity in the places where we live, pray, learn, regardless of race, regardless of gender, regardless of zip code, that there is free accessibility. And when I say free, that means free from harm, free from pollution, so that you are living and thriving in abundance. And then also with that is around equity and rules, right? So we have this very complicated, nuanced system that may be our democracy. That's another conversation for another day. But we need to make sure that when we talk about environmental justice, that we're talking about those people who have been historically disenfranchised, have a seat at the table, that they have access to governance, self-governance, and resiliency, and holding those people who are in seats of power and decision-making, hold them accountable and letting them know that they work for the people and not the other way around. So that's how I feel my definition from it for environmental justice.
Thank you, Latricia. Dr. Newsom?
Yes. First of all, happy Earth Day. And thank you, Anthony and Maritza and Empower DC for creating this space for this discussion. Empower DC is just an amazing organization with amazing leaders. And I was so happy to get to spend a little bit of time with you before I left the White House to learn about your work, to see the community that you've been working in. And again, just so impressed with your advocacy and your vision for transformation. So just thank you to all of your team and what you do. And as always, it is wonderful to be able to see the beautiful Latricia, who is an amazing powerhouse. And so again, thank you for just creating this space. So, I mean, my goodness, you know, when I think about environmental justice, you know, like my definition is a little bit everywhere, because to me, it's a movement, it's an aspiration, it's what we all deserve, which is clean, healthy, sustainable places to live and grow and thrive and raise our families and enjoy this beautiful world God created. That is the simplest definition. But when I think about what it really, really means is that growing up in Detroit, Michigan, I did not understand why, for example, our daycare centers that we owned in the city in different parts of the city of Detroit had babies that were exposed to toxins like lead in their homes. And we were left to figure out how to manage those health impacts from that exposure and intervene when schools were trying to put our babies back or put them on a track that would not allow them to be successful and succeed and matriculate through school. I also did not understand why certain areas of the city served as dumping grounds for industry. Where I grew up, my church, literally next to major industry, and the fact that you could smell so many ridiculous things, you know, whether you were leaving service, leaving your home, and knowing that those smells contributed to, again, the health impacts of communities that had no idea, in many cases, what they were being exposed to over generations. I did not understand why my great aunts that lived on certain parts of the city had horrible issues with asthma. I did not understand why my parents and other folks' homes flooded repeatedly and the level of response and care and recovery for them was beyond unsatisfactory. So when I think about environmental justice, it is the solution for all of that that I named, all of that that I have seen and experienced. And when you're raised by parents and grandparents and really a village that our premise was to take care of each other, I cannot not use, again, what little power and privilege I have to help amplify those voices of folks that have been invisible, to create paths to resources so folks can take care of themselves and their family. And again, my spiritual connection to, again, we are supposed to be stewards of this earth. That is what environmental justice means to me. And so, again, it's simply, again, this opportunity to like live without fear that our environment is going to jack us up and literally be hazardous to our health, welfare, and well-being.
Yes, thank you all so much for those answers. You know, I definitely do agree with everything that you both said. You know, is our safety, you know, is number one priority, you know, being protected from our different types of exposures, you know, ensuring that we have, you know, safe places to grow. And, you know, and I really like that stewardship comment, Dr. Newsom, as well. You know, how, what is our relationship, you know, to the, you know, earth that we're, you know, walking on. And I guess to shift gears a little bit, you know, you both have been, you know, working in this environmental space, you know, before, during, and continuously after, you know, the Biden-Harris administration. You know, although that administration had made great strides, you know, but y'all have been doing that work, you know, on the ground, you know, in the communities, you know, way before. And I just, you know, definitely hats off to you all for that. So I guess since there's been a shift in administration, you know, what do you all think needs to be protected to keep advancing environmental justice? You know, what are the types of strategies? You know, there's a lot of doom and gloom nowadays, but you know, what keeps you all going? And what are some of those priorities?
So I can speak to that. I think one of the big questions that people have asked me, and I'm sure that Dr. J probably have gotten this as well, is, so what's next? What I always did, I'm going back home and I'm working on the ground in community, which I never stopped anyway, right? In that role. I think one of the biggest things that is so important is we must keep environmental justice alive, even with the language. And that's important because right now, even uttering the words environmental justice, uttering the words climate change, climate justice is under attack. We owe it to our elders. We owe it to our ancestors to maintain this legacy because we still haven't achieved it. And so if we kind of water down what this is, we're going to always stand on environmental justice over here. If we water it down, then we do a disservice to our people, to our community, to our ancestors, and to our elders who deserve a break, who deserve rest. And so what I will say is right now more than ever, whether you're in the District of Columbia, whether, you know, you're in Maryland, Virginia, there are certainly things that can still move forward from a local perspective. Unfortunately, DC is not a state, so you do have DC Council, but if there are listeners that are calling in or listening in from a state, you do have your state legislature. So, you know, regardless of what exists or what does not exist anymore at the federal level for right now, right? For right now, there is still power. There's people power that never went away. And I think it does push our thinking to think about how do we become more engaged with local ordinances, local resolutions to work in favor of community. I think that it also gives us an opportunity to also think about how do we keep the momentum going around a green economy. You know, regardless of, again, what's happening at the federal level, we still need jobs. Those same jobs, those same opportunities, they don't have to go away. So I still believe that there is definitely had been a strong foundation that was set within the previous 4 years that we still can maintain. Even beyond just from a workforce development perspective, my big thing is around youth. There's opportunities to instill these concepts of environmental justice with our young people. There are opportunities to reimagine what our K through 12 institutions look like, what it looks like inside of the classroom, because we know that regardless of whoever is sitting in the White House right now feels about climate change is imminent. We see it all around us. And so we're borrowing this planet, we're borrowing this earth from our children. The least that we can do is to ensure that our children, our youth, have the skills to maintain and to also, unfortunately, they inherited a mess. You know, at first it was millennials. We're like, we inherited a mess. We tried to do our best. But it's really important for us to still maintain that investment, not just for us, but for our future. And then the last thing that I will say that I believe is really paramount is we have to take care of ourselves. We are literally in the wrath, as my grandmother would say. But it's really important for us, even if it seems impossible, for us to seek resolve within ourselves, to rest. It's great to be resilient, but sometimes you owe it to yourself to rest. I think, you know, it also is important for us to study historical movements. This is not the first time in American history where we have seen this type of vitriol and hatred. It's been the underbelly of this country since its false inception when they impeded upon the indigenous people that already acquired this land. So let's think about those things. Let's think about how this is not the first time that we've had to fight for a triumph and help that to keep us elevated, to keep us inspired, to keep fighting and to keep celebrating those wins that we see on the ground.
Yes, thank you, Dr. J.
Yeah, no, I mean, beautifully said, and I'll just add a couple of things. When I think about really the last 3.5 years that I was in the White House, I really wasn't able to do anything beyond my work in the White House because everything was a conflict of interest. So I feel like I am free, my shackles are off. And so since January 20th of this year, I've been so excited to get re-engage locally in my community. So I'm on a housing work group, again, around equity and housing. You know, I'm joining, again, the West Bloomfield Democrats and, you know, trying to figure out how I can get on a local zoning board. And so doing some work in Pontiac around building civic engagement and education. So I am really excited because, yes, I'm, you know, still going to keep my eye on what's happening at the federal level. But we have to, I think, spend more time and energy focused on the things that we can change and shift that, again, as Latricia said, at the local and state level, we have a lot of power, and so we need to use it. So I want to encourage folks, again, we should hopefully be out of the grief stages by now, and it's time to be action-oriented. So I just want to, you know, again, underscore that. But I think in general, again, you know, there's three things that, you know, with this, I can't even say a shift in administration. It has been a upheaval, destruction of the things that we tried to lay down in the Biden-Harris administration. There's three things that I want folks to think about, and I want to use this again as an opportunity for a call for action. The first is that we have to continue to support the advocacy and community work that is happening at the local and state level. So as a previous funder and national grant maker, again, if you are a funder if you provide resources to community-based organizations, do not stop now. Now, I'm not asking you to fill the entire gap that's going to be, you know, that is being created by the federal agencies, but you still have an important role. So there are companies, there are funders, there are people that continue to support organizations that are working towards environmental justice, working towards equity. And I encourage you to not backslide and continue that, because these organizations need legal support, they need staff capacity, they need a whole bunch of stuff. So again, we have to continue to protect and support the advocacy and community work that is happening. That's thing number one. Thing number two is we have to protect the infrastructure that was created. Now, again, the federal stuff, we don't have too much control over that. But a lot of the work, the plans, the research agenda, the data, the partnerships, I don't care who's in the White House, they can't destroy that. So you have an opportunity at the local and state level to build on that infrastructure. Don't just let it wisp away. You can use tools. You can use the recommendations from the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council. You can use the climate resilience plans. Those can be foundations, again, for practices at the local and state level. So the infrastructure does not have to disappear just because the federal government lost its interest in environmental justice or equity. It is time for folks to step up. And the last piece, which I think is so important, is, again, the protection of people, right? We know that just because these things are happening at the federal level, that they are trying to, in many ways, erase, ignore, deny that, you know, environmental protection is important. We know there are still communities right now that are overburdened, that are dealing with the same stuff 4 months ago as they are today. So as I speak to my local and state government brothers and sisters and leaders, and I used to work in state government, again, this is the time for you to step up and ramp up your protections, your inspections. The work does not stop just because the federal government has changed their menu. So again, communities are depending on you. They're depending on you for protection, and that protection of people, which we are all called to do in public service, is essential and more critical right now than ever. So again, my call to action, funders, step up, protect the infrastructure and protect the people, and we will be all right. We will get through this.
Thank you all for those words of encouragement. You know, I definitely resonate with everything that you all are saying. We're going to keep the show moving. But before I ask my next question, I would like to open it up for callers to call in. So using this time to call in to ask these ladies some wonderful questions. So that number is 202-588-0893. If you would like to call in to ask a question, again, that is 202-588-0893. 0893, and we'll answer your questions very shortly. But for you all, Latricia, you kind of touched on this a little bit already, but you know, there's been an attack on DEI initiatives and certain words like justice and climate that are under attack. So, you know, I guess from the advice that you already gave, but you know, furthering that advice, you know, for both of you all, you know, how for the people that are using this language, you know, what should they do? You know, what should they, you know, be mindful of? What strategies should they be thinking about? You know, should they continue to look at these funding sources? Should they get creative, look at other funding sources, I guess? So what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, so I'll say is I think that, so I'm still going to stand on environmental justice business, period. I'm going to say what I'm going to say. I mean, I've already been attacked, but I'm going to stand my ground, right? But I think one of the things that I think is really critical at this point is really, even though there's this attack on DEI and the concept of inclusivity, one of the things that I think is critical at this point is to further demonstrate how people who are not Black are also disenfranchised by environmental injustice. It is very clear that some people, when they see DEI, they automatically think that means Black. go ahead and tell us you're racist and you're anti-Black, well, tell us you're anti-Black. But the thing is, I'll use some examples, you know, throughout the country. When we think about environmental justice issues, yes, they disproportionately impact Black, Latino, and Indigenous people, but they also, these issues also impact white people, particularly poor white people. And so I think there is a significant amount of work that has to be done to really further demonstrate and amplify what those issues are and to say these are environmental injustices. Environmental justice doesn't live with a particular like group of people. It speaks to the issue itself. I think it's really important to be able to delineate that. It's not a Black liberation movement in isolation. It's literally going to benefit everyone if we have environmental justice. So I think about, for example, in rural communities, largely white Republican rural communities, they oftentimes bear the brunt of really insidious environmental issues. And so I think that it's important to really focus on where there is connection, where there is overlap. So I'll give you a quick example. It's not specific to the DC area, but in the state of Tennessee, there is the Tennessee Valley Authority, which essentially is the country's largest power utility provider. And so they provide power to a lot of the states in the Southeast, of course, Tennessee being one of them, Mississippi, you know, some other neighboring states. And so with this public utility provider or supplier, they're looking to expand pipelines. Like, my God, right? And so a lot of these pipelines not only impact majority Black communities, they are hitting those rural white communities, those agricultural communities. They're hitting them really hard. And so one of the things that we find to be really important is that's an environmental injustice for someone to completely disregard community and essentially bulldoze and bully communities for corporate interests. That's literally environmental injustice. And so I think that it, again, is really important to make that more apparent, to really try to separate, you know, I can't personally do anything about people being racist, but if we just focus on the issue and the issue themselves, there is so much overlap. We're really not as different as media and this propaganda is making us out to be. That's literally by design, forcing pollution in a white rural community is still similar to forcing pollution into a Black community, into a Latino community, to an Indigenous community. So I really think that it's important for us to really identify who the culprit is, right? It's not each other. It is all of these people who have power based on how much money they have. So I think that is really critical. And not necessarily a shift. I think that environmental justice has always tried to achieve that. When we talk about inclusivity, there is inclusivity in this movement because it's not just only Black folks. It's not just only brown folks. It's people who are not existent in the 1%, essentially. And so we have to keep that momentum going. We have to remain true to the essence of what environmental justice is, but kind of breaking down or demystifying some of the false understandings of what environmental justice is.
Thank you for that. And before I pass it to Dr. J, I would just like to remind our listeners, if you would like to call in to ask a question, the number is 202-588-0893. And we'll try to answer that after this. So a reminder, 202-588-0893. So I'd like to go ahead and kick it back to Dr. J.
Yeah, I tell you, this is not an easy question, because I think it really depends on the situation. And what I'm gonna say might not be popular, but that's all right. I think I have spent the last couple of months speaking with leaders in, again, foundations, in academia, in corporations, and that question of, you know, do we change what we stand for? Do we change titles? Do we stop funding anything that has justice or equity or inclusion in it? And my answer has been, heck no. You stand firm because you essentially have really nothing to lose other than your, again, the trust and the partnership that you have built up with organizations. If you lose faith and lose ground and, as I say, backslide, you know, you standing firm with keeping these words in your work and supporting this work, if you don't, you have more to lose than many of the organizations that you're supporting. So that has been my consistent message, that you keep on saying, I'm funding DEI, that you keep on saying, I'm funding environmental justice. To me, that's a non-starter. But then I'm going to, I guess, put myself in the situation of other community-based organizations that have been reaching out to me to say, what do I do? Do I change, you know, my grant? Do I shift my work? Do I change the title of my, you know, chief diversity officer? And to me, it's a question of survival. And it's also this question on what's more important. Is it the words that we're saying or is it the work that we're doing? And my thing is, if what is most important is taking care, supporting, and moving the work in communities, I don't care what you call it. What's most important is that the values of environmental justice, of diversity, equity, and inclusion are a part of how you do the work. That even though you might not say the word or the terminology, you are still putting forth a program, you know, advocacy or work that is protecting those communities that, again, continue to be invisible and overburdened. And so I think it really depends on your context and where you sit. And again, some folks, again, they should not have the freedom or the opportunity to backslide. So thank you to the Apples. Thank you to the Costco's. Thank you to Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for holding firm. And I want to see more of that. I think, again, when it comes to our community-based organizations, it is a different story. When you have folks, again, under attack, losing funds, can't get funds, don't know where and how you're going to pay for staff capacity, it is a different story. And I can't speak to that situation because I'm not in that situation now, but I know that's what I've heard, that's what I've heard. And if it's about survival, then you have to do what you have to do to survive.
Thank you. I guess my next question for you all, I guess in the spirit of this, I guess in our environmental justice movement, right, what should, I guess, our opportunities and strategies and kind of like our priorities should be, you know, during this administration, you know, if that's, you know, focusing more so on policy, if it's more so mutual aid, you know, is it coalition building, you know, how do we really, you know, fight back, you know, during this time on where should we really focus our energy?
Ooh, that's a big question. So I think what I have been led to focus on, which has always been like front of mind, is simply around health, around public health. So even with the current administration, you'll hear things like from EPA that they say that, you know, the focus is on clean air, you know, clean water. Okay, let's do it. You know, right? So that really doesn't change like what was already happening in community, and kind of akin to what Dr. J said, Like, whatever you're calling it, at the end of the day, the work speaks for itself. You know, now from an identity perspective, you know, that's a different conversation. But I do think that there is still opportunity to advocate for our wellness, for our health and well-being. I'm going to raise up again. I do think that there is an opportunity to do more investment around local policy. Where oftentimes, and we kind of learned this the hard way, right? Where there was a hyper dependency on federal policy as well as federal funding. I think that it's also been way overdue, and this is probably going to be an interesting response for somebody like me, but it is important for states and local jurisdictions to invest in environment. Far too often, there's hyper dependency on state funding, if you are a state, on federal funding. And we see that there have been decades worth of divestment and complete dependency on federal funds. And that's terrifying. You actually have like environmental organizations, EJ organizations that have been warning that there should have been local funding. And now we're kind of pushed into a corner where we don't have a choice. Right. So I think in addition to, you know, thinking about the policy front, I do think that it is an opportunity to think about funding models. I think about right now in D.C., you know, there's been a huge push since 2018 around replacement of lead service lines. There was a significant amount of federal investment around lead service line replacement, but it wasn't meant to do 100%. You need D.C. Council to step up. You need Mayor Bowser. Girl, come through, you know, with this money. We know that there's an issue. You literally have to put your money where your mouth is, right? So it is going to shake things up a bit from a local funding perspective. I think also in addition to that, it's going to require from a local perspective to be more long-term oriented. Far too often with environment, we're so reactive. Like things literally have been deteriorating for decades, dilapidated for decades. And it's not until everything literally and figuratively crashes and burns that there is responsiveness, which now at this point, things are extremely expensive. Where if you would have done your due diligence over time, like I think about the concept, I'm gonna go back to my K-12 days, deferred maintenance, for example. We need our government, our local government agencies to have like that mentality that things are going to get old over time. There has to be investment over time. Stop letting things kind of just accumulate and get to its worst and think about how there can be improvement over time. So I think that, you know, in this very prickly, dare I say, space, it does create an opportunity for more innovation at the local level, both in our funding, both from a programmatic perspective, where, you know, at least for now, you know, the dependency on federal funding is just not, we got to come up with something else. We got to come up with it quick. And we have to make sure that this never happens again, that where we are so dependent on federal funding that we can't operate. And that's not just for infrastructure, that's for research as well. Hello, higher education, which is fighting for their lives right now. That's also for labor as well. That's for nearly every, you know, local governmental institution, NGOs, everybody has to be more thoughtful about how do we create our own locus of control around funding where we're not at the beckoning call of our masters, right? When we talk about liberation, it's also around liberation with resources and economic liberation as well.
Yes, I love that so much. Dr. J?
It's so hard following Tricia. I'm like, Lord have mercy, I don't know what to say now. I mean, a couple of things. My goodness, we have so much work to do, but I mean, definitely, I want to double click on, again, the local policy work. And I want to expand that we need to create the next level of leadership at the local and state level. We need folks that, again, we need to start grooming leaders that understand what this environmental justice, diversity, equity, inclusion stuff is, that have actually been in the trenches. And we need to, again, create that pathway for leadership, whether it's on boards, on commissions, you know, our next, you know, set of elections that are coming up. So that is, again, super critical. I think we cannot be quiet about what is happening. And so, again, trying to build a bigger tent of people that, again, maybe didn't know or didn't care before, but now they're like, maybe I need to be involved and have a voice. And so how do we, again, kind of educate folks to a space where they feel like they can have some type of impact or some type of influence on the people and decisions that impact that their everyday lives? And so that general civic education is so important right now, because people, I think, are starting to see that that government is important. And even more important now is, again, government at the local and state level, and making sure that you have a voice and representation is important. I would say the third thing, and I spent the beginning parts of my career working in private industry in manufacturing facilities, oftentimes deemed as the enemy of communities. But what I tried to do in those spaces was really open the minds and hearts of those leaders in these chemical facilities to say, hey, just because it's been done this way for 100 years doesn't mean that we have to do it now. If we know a better way, we should do better. And oftentimes I would tease the folks in the plant, because I was a production supervisor, that, you know, we'd be duct taping stuff just to keep stuff running, you know, and so duct tape solutions eventually wear out. And so to Latricia's point, how do we use this time now where we are, I would say, in many ways, a little bit broken, to build a longer lasting, real sustainable infrastructure, not only from a funding perspective, but organizational perspective from local and state government? How do we use this time now to rebuild back something that is going to be stronger and better and not just, again, a duct tape solution? The other piece that I've been thinking hard about and really is going to be a focus of my work is really, I call it building the business case for environmental justice. I mean, most of us, I would imagine, I don't want to assume, but on this phone, know that environmental justice is real. It's not something that's made up. It's not something just for the fun of it. It is real folks being impacted. But for some reason, that's not enough to convince some of the biggest offenders that they need to do something different. And so what I'd like to do and what I'm doing over the next, really, again, 3 or 4 years is saying, okay, corporate America, okay, you biggest offenders, you know, what is it that we need to do to convince you that just changing the way you operate, actually investing in the communities where you have a footprint, you know, acknowledging the past hurt and harm that you've caused in these communities, that there is a case for that. You know, I know you might not just do it because it's right or moral, but there is a case, you know, for doing the right thing. And so I feel like this is a time, in this time of rebuilding and reimagining what we want, that we need to hold these folks accountable. And I'm talking about corporate industry, and that's where my focus is going to be. And so the last thing that I would say is, a lot of what I've been thinking about, and other folks have said this too, is a Project 2029. Like, what is our vision? I mean, they had their Project 2025. They were working on that probably 50 years, right? Well, I think we need to think about what is our Project 2029, but what is our 25 or 30 year plan? I feel like we got caught with our pants down, we meaning the broader movement, environmental justice movement. How do we make sure that that does not happen again? I mean, and shame on us if we don't learn from what I think, again, was just a huge, I don't even know if it was a mistake or we just thought things were going to go our way. So what are the people, what are the tents, what are the connections that we need to create this larger plan, again, for now, but also for the future? So again, if something like this were to happen again, we're not just falling apart like we are now and trying to literally survive. So I feel like there is so much work to do. And with all of that, I want to go back again to something Latricia said and something a dear friend of mine told me and reminded me. Delon, we're not even, I don't know, I haven't counted yet. I don't even think we're 100 days in, right? And we've been fighting this hard and sweating. We got a long way to go. So we got to pace ourselves. We got to take care of ourselves because we cannot be burnt out. We have a long fight, and that's why we need more people in this fight.
Thank y'all so much for that. Y'all don't even know how much life y'all are speaking into me right now, and hopefully to our listeners as well. And, you know, in the spirit of, you know, long fights, you know, that's something that we talk about at Empower DC, like, since I've joined. You know, we are geared for the long-term fights. We're preparing for those long, cold battles. But I guess, you know, in the spirit of also, you know, protecting ourselves and protecting our health, you know, what do you all do to kind of protect your peace? And, you know, I guess also, what do you focus on and that like brings you joy and brings you that happiness to ensure that you don't have that burnout? Especially as a young person that's, you know, kind of just starting in this battle with you all.
Yeah, so what I will say, being able to spend time with my family, so being on that White House journey, especially like last year, was insane. Oh, the amount of time that was spent away from home. And when I say home, like family is home for me. I thought about Dr. J said earlier that, like, man, being in, and I can't imagine what her role was because I wasn't staff. Okay. So I wasn't, you know, career staff. But that being with family and friends and creating like routines. And what I mean by routines is like, I'll give you an example. So my best friend of like over 30 years, like we have standing brunch, we sure do. And like, we treat that like we would treat a standing meeting, you know, like in our professional realm. You know, I think about every Sunday, I try my absolute best, to ensure that I do dinner with my mom, you know, bringing back those same type of like 90s babies feel, 80s baby feels, where we, you know, convened at least once a week, you know, where we are with family. That's restorative for me. And then also, I've adopted this other mantra right now while we're in the midst of all chaos right now. Get somebody else to do it. So right now I'm leaning on these allies. You've been saying that you've been an ally, baby. This is your chance to be valiant, to be great, to be courageous. We're gonna lean hard on the allies. You know, Black women, we're tired, the 92%. So that's what I've really been leaning into, is like probably the most, because I'm big Aries and type A personality, being able to let go and delegate things to really create space and boundaries. Because when I think about some of my favorite civil rights activists, my absolute favorite is Fannie Lou Hamer. And a lot of Black activists, they died. They died young, right? Regardless of the violence, but literally like the psychological violence took a toll on them, right? And so I refuse and I declare, you know, to allow that to take me out of here too soon. So very much so keeping that front of mind, making sure that it's okay for me to do fun stuff, right? And not feeling like that is like I'm not deserving of that. So I, you know, I'm really creating like much more of a balance and really encourage other people to do that as well. Even if it means to redefine what is joy to you at this point, it may be a little bit different, but creating time to study yourself from an introspective perspective to figure out like what absolutely brings me joy that's not connected to work. Our ministry is our ministry, but we still are a very nuanced and complicated wonder of God. So besides just your ministry, your work, what other things bring you joy? So that's my path and journey right now. And I'm hoping that those who are listening are also doing the same.
Thank you for that, Dr. J.
I love it, but I'm gonna be real honest, y'all. It's hard. Like, I had planned on, like, again, January 20th, when my shackles are off, to just kind of chill and do nothing for at least a couple of weeks. That did not happen. Again, was responding, trying to be supportive. I could not step away. And I just felt guilty if I had decided to step away. Actually, my former White House staff, we were meeting every week, trying to, again, I think, source of support for each other, because everything that we worked to create was being disassembled. But also, again, just trying to be responsive to all of our federal agency partners that were still in the trenches, you know, again, community organizations calling for legal assistance and all that stuff. So it was nonstop for the first month and a half. But what I am learning is I am a couple years from reaching 5 decades of life on this earth, is that I will be no good to anybody if I don't take care of my temple. And so what I've been doing is really focused on my physical health, getting back to taking the time to eat right, taking the time to rest, because I don't have to be in 14 Zoom meetings back to back like I was in the White House. Trying not to travel as much. And so that is critical for me, because I have probably every chronic disease possible covered by both sides of my family. My father unfortunately left this earth very young, at the age of 59. My mom is dealing with some health issues. And so I have to be at the top of my game to help take care of her and other folks. So that's priority number one right now, is really health. And I encourage folks to get your mammograms, get your annual exams, get, you know, all that stuff. Don't take it for granted. Cancer is real. And I just, again, and it just reminds me, we have these reminders every day. I think the other thing that I have restarted back up is going to Zumba. Dancing brings me joy. And I was missing my class at the YMCA because I was always traveling on somebody's plane. But again, finding the things that bring you joy, whether it's dancing, whether it's the theater, just taking the time to invest in yourself is important. And that's what I'm doing. The third, and I would say it's definitely not the last, but it's just hanging out with my family, particularly my girls. I have a 16-year-old and an 18-year-old, so we are looking at colleges for the young one. And so we're going different places and experiencing and trying to help her figure out the next path in her life. And to me, that is so refreshing, because again, that time goes so fast. And so really the folks in your life, you're not guaranteed tomorrow. And that is why, again, I think investing that time in the people you care about, it is it is necessary, but it also brings me so much joy. So the other thing, and then I'll shut up, is really service. Because for me, when you ain't got to worry about yourself and you're actually focused on others, whether that's in your community, your church, your family, that is just refreshing for me. Being able to just be of service, and it's not really around environmental stuff, but just in any way. So I've been actually having, which I just used to never do or take the time, like meeting up with a sister from church just to have lunch, or, you know, to connect, you know, go for a walk in the park, even though it's cold in Michigan, it doesn't matter. Like, just those little things to connect with people, just to actually be human for a while, is so important and so refreshing, because we are more than our work. Yes, this work has been my ministry and I feel like my calling, but you know, we got to take a break sometimes and take care of ourselves. We're not going to be good to anybody if we are so tapped out and burned out.
Thank you all so much for that. You know, I'm always battling with that myself, trying to figure out where's that balance between, you know, me, my work, my personal life. It's just like so many barriers that I'm trying to always constantly break down. We have only a few minutes left, so I will definitely open it up for you all if you had any last final comments or words that you want to share with the community before I let you all be great individuals that you all are.
I would say, and this is going to sound really cliche, but like, don't give up and don't give in. We can't. Like, our babies are dependent on us. So we got to. Yep. That was it, short and sweet, but that's what I would like to leave people with, is we can't. We can't stop.
Thank you. Dr. J?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, too. I think, add on to that, I mean, think about what our ancestors went through, right? And I know this is hard. You know, again, I'm not young anymore. I feel young in spirit, but not young by age. But I mean, I know there's a lot of folks that maybe have not experienced anything like what we've been through, and it seems like literally the end of the world. I think about my staff at the White House, and they were, again, in their 20s and 30s, and just like, you know, just, it was a lot, right? So just know that we stand on some folks that went through so much more. So yes, I hope that's inspiration. Lean on the strength of our ancestors and lean on each other.
Great, thank you all so much.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. Senator Cory Booker has been in a marathon since last night. Not in running, but in speaking. The New Jersey Democrat has been holding the Senate floor in a speech protesting actions taken by President Trump's administration during his 71 days back in office. Senator Booker began his speech at 7 p.m. last night, and as of 1 p.m. this afternoon, he has continued speaking for 18 hours straight and counting, only yielding to listen to comments from some of his constituents. Here's part of Senator Booker's opening remarks.
Republicans as well as Democrats are talking to me about what they feel is a sense of dread about a growing crisis, or what they point to about what is going wrong, that bedrock commitments in our country that both sides rely on, that people from all backgrounds rely on, those bedrock commitments are being broken. Unnecessary hardships are being borne by Americans of all backgrounds.
Booker vowed that he would continue speaking as long as he was physically able. The senator cannot yield the floor for a break, to sit down, or to use the restroom, because doing so would allow the presiding officer to move on with Senate business. On December 4th of last year, Brian Thompson, the CEO of United Healthcare, was murdered outside of a New York City hotel by Luigi Mangione, a 26-year-old male who had a vendetta against insurance companies. Today, U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi directed federal prosecutors to seek the death penalty against Mangione, calling the killing, quote, a premeditated, cold-blooded assassination that shocked America. Mangione faces separate federal and state murder charges for the killing. The federal charges include murder through use of a firearm, which carries the possibility of the death penalty. The state charges carry a maximum punishment of life in prison. Attorney General Bondi said seeking the death penalty for Mangione is in line with, quote, President Trump's agenda to stop violent crime and make America safe again. On his first day back in office, the president signed an executive order compelling the Justice Department to seek the death penalty in federal cases where applicable. Devastation and desperation are the kind of words being used to describe the aftermath of the massive 7.7 magnitude earthquake that hit Myanmar on Friday. It was the strongest quake to hit the Southeast Asian country in more than 100 years. Officials say that over 4,500 people were injured and more than 2,700 people have died, but that number is expected to exceed 3,000. Relief groups have reported an urgent need for food, water, and shelter, and they also warned that the window to find survivors was fast closing. Officials say 441 people are missing. Rescue workers who have been searching for survivors still trapped in the rubble face difficulty due to a lack of heavy machinery that's typically used for search and rescue efforts, which is forcing many to search for survivors by hand in extreme heat as daily temperatures exceed 104 degrees Fahrenheit. In the D.C. area, former Ward 8 D.C. Councilmember Trayon White said he has, quote, unfinished business with regard to his reelection campaign. White said, and I quote, everywhere I go, people keep saying, we need you here. There's no one to protect us. No one's going to fight for us like you, end quote. Less than 2 months ago, Trayon White was expelled by unanimous vote from the D.C. Council after an independent investigation found that he violated city and council rules. He had been arrested by the FBI in August and